GSF 90.1 FM.
Exercise it.
British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Wow. No.
Find us online at cjsf.ca and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Hello and there we go. That sounds a bit better. Hello and welcome to Cancri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith,
and I'm Sebastian.
Let's turn you up a smidge as well.
At a secret remote location.
Yeah, here, it looks like your bedroom, according to the web camera.
But where is my bedroom?
This is true. Just off the corridor on the left.
No, it's actually the
it's off the
room.
Right, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I suppose if you turn around and come in the other way, then it would be the left.
What?
Like if you turn around and you face the other way, then it would be on the left.
In the sense that if something's on your right and then you turn around, it's on your left now?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's trivial. That's literally true in every single room in the world. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, moving away from whether or not your secret location is on the left or the right hand of your hallway, let's dive into what has been... I don't know. Our listeners can't see this, and you can barely see it, but I have a whole list of things that have been going on in the world in terms of gay news this week. It's been a very busy... Very
Some
busy.
Of those news stories, I'm willing to bet, are things that were not going on that were supposed to be going on as well. There's a couple of those stories.
Well, a lot of them is also just nice. It's just good news, you know.
Okay.
I do love a bit of good news. You know how much
notice that actually when I was poking around, looking at all the various updates on social media and blah blah blah. It was dozens of small stories, but nice stories. You know, the usual, this time of year, it's normally small town pride. This community had an event and it went very nicely and people came up and nothing happened. And in some ways, it's hard to report on that. But on the other hand, I like reporting on that because nothing bad happened and it was just pleasant. It's sort of like, you know, news report this week, King Charles had a cheese sandwich and it was lovely. Like sometimes I just wish that that's what the news was, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's start off. This past Sunday, yesterday at time of recording, the folks in St. John's, Newfoundland, they gathered at City Hall and they raised their pride flag. And it was a pleasant day.
And it didn't rain.
It didn't rain.
Was on fire.
You know, the speeches weren't too long or too dreary. Yeah, it was a good day. It was a pleasant day. People in St. John had pleasant time with a flagpole. End
Good.
Of story. Yeah, which is always great start. And there was a story coming out in Alberta talking about how there are a whole range of small town prides now that have, and there's an increase in backlash. You know, people showing up at council meetings talking about how terrible these things are and so on and so forth. And honestly, I think the nice story here is that lots of small towns in Alberta are engaging in pride.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do have stories from Alberta as well, but that's probably a bigger story for later. But do you have a list of these communities and have they had pride in the past?
Oh, my jays. So I believe that the folks in Westlock, Alberta, painted a rainbow crosswalk for the first time in the town's history, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. Some people didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Let's have a look. It was unanimously passed by the local city councillors, which was very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we got? We've got, obviously, the RCMP out there have been raising concerns, but there have been increases in hate crimes all over the place. Mm-hmm. In Panoka, a United Church had black tar dropped on its rainbow, which was not very nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's been a couple of new prides around as well. But, you know, on the whole, mm-hmm. lovely. Mm-hmm. But there are some folks who have become more and more emboldened to go out and destroy flags and sort of make their anti-gay position known to the world. Well, mm-hmm. in Hamilton, you know, we talk about Hamilton. In Hamilton, a little while ago, there was an elementary school.
Hamilton, Ontario.
Ontario, not yeah. Hamilton, New Mexico.
I'm willing to bet every province in Canada has a Hamilton in it somewhere.
Oh, probably. Yeah. 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 And if not, they have a Hamiltonian in them. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So in Hamilton a couple of weeks ago, maybe a few weeks ago, there was some people broke into a elementary school, mm-hmm. tore down their pride flag and set it on fire. It's very, very just not a cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. Bit of a dickish activity. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the Hamilton police are looking for them. They found the CCTV footage. They know what mm-hmm. car they drove. So if you are the mean, you know, just unsavory sort of person that did that, just be aware that the Hamilton police are actively looking out for you. So mm-hmm. and looking out for you in the they're going to find you way, not protecting your overall well-being, although they might be doing that as well in general, but they are, I mean, they're looking for
once them. You're arrested, you're in their care, they have a legal obligation.
Yeah, then they'll have to look after your overall well-being, but for now they're just hunting you down. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, Hamilton issued an update saying that they were working on that as well. Let me just see. There was some interesting news from the Anglican Church.
That's the story.
That's
that
the
I
story
found.
You saw.
Yeah, that the diocese, not the diocese, the synod had met in Alberta recently to have a vote on. It wasn't blessing gay marriages. It was there's a very
pastoral. That's the right one, isn't it? Liturgical texts to embrace and support trans and gender and non-binary people in its church. Now, it's mm-hmm. worth mentioning that the Archbishop of Kootenay, Archbishop McNaughton, she was a strong advocate for this. Her own child has come out as non-binary and now identifies with the name Jasper. So it was a case of like, look, you know, we're hearing it from not only our, not constituents, not clergy, what are they called? People in the congregants. There we go. people in the congregation. What are they called?
I had that moment where you had a brain fart and that caused me to brain fart.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a contagious brain fart. They're like, you know, not only are we hearing this from our congregation, we're hearing it from our own children. You know, mm-hmm. And it's really, it's not the Church of Canada, or the Anglican Church of Canada, introducing any major change. It's essentially mm-hmm. just guidance being like, if you want to address this topic, here are some relevant psalms, here is mm-hmm. you know, some relevant hymns, you know, this mm-hmm. is, if you want to take the approach, and lots of Anglican churches are very much in favor of this approach, that mm-hmm. everyone is made in God's image, that it's not everyone's made in God's image asterisk unless you know, identify as trans or non-binary, in which case tough luck, close asterisk, you know, that's not there. They're like, you know, if you want to be respectful and engage with your full congregation, and as we discussed before, it's about 1% ish that identify as trans, then, you know, these are just tools to address that. So is that what you were hearing in terms of this Anglican Church story?
Oh yeah. That's exactly it, really. From what I read, there's a few people who they didn't protest, but they had questions. And the number of people who voted against the collection of the list of liturgies was minimal, but mostly it was just people saying, are we sure that these particular readings apply. There was really just more about an accuracy thing. It's sort of like, you know, the classic case of a a law being voted down, not because people were against it, because they didn't like the phrasing of it. You know, there have been a lot of good laws in Canada where the intent was there, but the phrasing was ooh. So the opposition voted it down. And there's a little bit of that. But in the end, it passed. Yeah. I found a little bit more detail from the looks of it. But I mean, that's how synods go, though. Synods really get into the weeds. That's the whole point of it. It's not just yay or nay, but yay or nay, and please provide a 10-page essay as to why. So
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there are some interesting news coming out of the synod in when it was like today's show brought to you by synods, apparently. But there was an interesting conversation brought out in the synod in the UK about the Church of England. The Anglican Church of England, the OG Anglicans, you know, the Anglicans from Anglica. Anyway, so
Anglia.
Anglia, there we go. And I was like, I know there's a place there somewhere. But it's worth mentioning the timeline here, because I think the timeline speaks volumes. Mm-hmm. So on around July 6th, so around last week, the Labour Member of Parliament in the UK, Ben Bradshaw, drafted a bill that would enable the Church of England or priests within the Church of England to conduct same-sex marriages. Now, just as a quick recap, because people may not be aware, that in the United Kingdom, the government, there were so many rules, separate rules and laws around the Church of England because of the, you know, the monarchy, the parliament, and the church, and then the sort of the way they all, the three of them interact. When Britain introduced same-sex marriage, there was a huge carve-out. It's like everyone should do same-sex marriages, asterisks, except the Church of England, which, you know, will figure this out in their own time, close asterisks. You know, they were very much left to themselves. But it's been a long time. So currently under the law, the way it's written, the Church of England cannot do same-sex weddings. Officially, because
even if they wanted to,
because they were carved out in this law. So that's why. So and the synod has been very anti making marriage happen, you know, because of the huge number of mostly South American and African Church of England, Anglican Church representatives. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this in the past, about how they overwhelmingly vote against it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Bradshaw introduced this bill saying, like, look, this isn't telling you that you have to do gay weddings and you have to attend them and you have to smile and have to have a good time. It's like, look, you know, if there's a priest that wants to do it, we are changing the law to say, from saying that you can't to that you could, not that you must. And I think that's the key difference here. They said that, it's got cross-party support. And I think essentially the government and lots of parliamentarians are just annoyed at how darn slow the Church of England is in terms of catching up to where the rest of the UK is.
Right,
Like, it's already law for equal marriage, except for the Church of England. So they're like, look, you know, get caught up. Anyway, 2 days later, after being threatened with this legislation, the Church of England is now working on drafting new pastoral guidance and materials to allow same-sex couples to receive blessings.
Just blessings?
Just blessings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so the weird four-hour thing is debate about getting blessings.
Right, right.
So you can get married elsewhere.
Right.
And then come to church that doesn't want to marry you and be blessed for it. But they're still not going to marry you. They can just bless you if somebody else does it.
Now, normally this would be a separation of church and state thing. And I would say, you know, if the church is kind of debating things internally, kind of just let it happen. But from the sounds of it, the way you explain it, would I be correct in saying that under the current legal system in the UK, they can't even administer wedding certificates?
No, the Church of England does issue weddings. And I think that the...
For same-sex couples.
No.
That's
the exception.
Because that's the thing. Because even if you had some local vicar, you know, off in Cork County, who wanted to marry a same-sex couple locally, if there are no wedding certificates available for them to do so... this is sort of the bureaucratic side of the relationship between the church and state that is not unique, but particular to England. The way that the Church of England and the government of England relate to each other kind of through the monarchy, but also not really through the monarchy. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's
like
English.
The archbishops of the Church of England hold seats in the House of Lords. So that, well, that would be the equivalent to the church having seats in the Senate in Canada. It just doesn't, you know, when you think about it out loud, you're like, that is kind of ridiculous. But it is the position that Britain finds itself in after several thousands years of evolving non-written down constitution. But yeah, the MPs have reached a point where they're frankly just fed up. They're like, you know what, you've been given your own time to deal with this. There are already talks of a schism in the Anglican Church. Yeah. Now, there was another church this past week that has been going through a bit of a schism on the topic of, usually I'm terrible at segues, but today I am on the ball.
They naturally flow into each other. This is news to me. Tell me about this. So I don't think I read about this.
I'm just trying to find, because I wasn't planning to talk about it. But let me see if I can find. No, it's not there. But I believe it is one of the U.S. churches.
Oh.
Yeah, here we go. 1/5 of the United Methodist churches have left the United Methodist Church.
Oh, okay.
Which is a huge number. You know, 1 in 5 of the churches, that's a massive number. So those congregations in every 5th U.S. Methodist church has petitioned to leave that church because the denomination currently considers the practice of homosexuality to be incompatible with Christian teaching. So they do not allow their clergy to perform same-sex marriages. Mm-hmm. Many of them are just doing it anyway. And those who are pushing back are essentially just leaving. So there have been about 6,000 that have left. And in the past year, there have been 4,172. So they're, most of them are joining the Global Methodist Church.
Okay,
so
now, this is really interesting because I know that I don't remember the details on the difference between Methodist churches and the other Protestant churches, but I do know that they're known for being moderately conservative, not quite as conservative as say Baptist or Orthodox, but definitely more conservative than United or Unitarian. So the fact that Methodist churches have gone in this direction is actually very interesting to me as a sort of an update on. I know that Methodist churches are not unique to North America, but I know that they're particular to North America. They're more common here than they are in the rest of the world. That's very interesting. I actually may read more into that after the show.
So the role of the church and LGBTQ life seems to be continuing to interact and intersect. Now, I do want to veer very much into a different topic, and I think it might be more appropriate to put a song here before we move on to talking about the no circuit gaze rule that was introduced for an event at the Adonis Club in London. I've perked your interest that with this one. Anyway, this is Bold by Mariah Sochil, and we will be back just after this.
Back down that road, never saying hello. I'm staying bold. All the judgments, all their hate, not going back to yesterday. There's only so many things that they can say. Only hoping to increase my pain. I'm not going back down that road. Never saying hello. I'm staying bold, staying clear. There's no more fear. Power bird in the sky is flapping. Clear as day, it became that you really had no shame. It hurt
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, just for our audience, I felt like before we start talking about circuit gays, we need a bit of a gap there between discussing, you know, liturgies and congregations and, you know,
and synods
and schisms and the such. I felt like, listen, the palate cleanser there. The incredibly talented Mariah Sochel with Bold, great new track. All of our artists this week are Canadian and LGBTQ self-identified. Great way to boost our representation. Now, Sebastian, can you tell us, I know because I'm, you know, all-knowing, but can you tell us, our audience, what is a circuit gay? Is that like a gay in IT, or...?
No, you've seen the Toronto Gay Pride Parade, surely.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, the TD float?
Went there Tuesday. Yeah,
The TD float? Those are circuit gays, yeah.
Yeah, so just imagine this. Whenever you see representations of Pride events, usually they're white. Usually they are very muscular, not Arnold Schwarzenegger muscular, heavy
lean
lifting
muscular.
Sorry,
yeah, lean muscular.
Yes. And they have they're wearing shorts with an inseam of 4 inches. Maybe it's just
too long.
Oh yeah, that's too many inches. But
Speedos.
That's the gist. That's a circuit game. And where does the term come from?
Well, if you've ever watched any shows about gay men, usually they focus in on circuit gays. So queer as folk, both the UK and US version, the main cast. Well, the older queer as folk. I haven't seen the new one, but from what I understand, they decided to move away from that. But they tend to focus in on circuit boys. But yeah, basically, circuit music is a genre of house music that kind of came out of the Chicago house scene. And it's basically called circuit music because it was kind of known for being the after party after the after party. So you'd go to a house music party, you know, big warehouse with 3,000 people dancing. And then you'd go to the after party. And then after that, there'd be another after party. And after that, there'd be another after party. So you go down the circuit of going from party to party. And it was just the music of the circuit scene in the 90s. So that's where the term circuit comes from.
Started in the 70s. The circuit party started in the 70s. I mean, they really hit an apex in the 90s for sure.
Oh, yeah. When house music came in, especially Chicago and Detroit house music, really revolutionized how a lot of the stuff was done. There's a lot of stuff in there with Frankie Knuckles, if you know the history of music. And anyway, they do also have a reputation, though, generally speaking, being overemployed for the age that they are. So you're looking at 22 to 35 year olds, stereotypically. They get a lot of money for their age. A lot of them are lawyers or political assistants, or just think of the kind of job where you could be making 90 a year while you're still 23. It's sort of this stereotype. A lot of them either, and if they don't have money, they spend money like they do have money, and they just live in poverty otherwise. This is the stereotype. They're known for being very aggressive at the club. Not aggressive as in like punch you in the face, but aggressive as in move out of the way. I'm a better dancer than you. You're taking up space. And sort of the party drug scene is also very much tied with circuit boys. Stereotypically, that's when you get your meth and ecstasy gay men.
Exactly. Yeah.
I worked in a club where, not a club, a gay bar that kind of avoided that. And the way that we did that is just by not playing the kind of music that was popular with them. And instead we had live jazz. So it was a completely different crowd. It's if you want them to come, if you don't want them to come, it's purely a matter of low lighting, flashing lights, and the right DJ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which leads into the story.
We have them in Canada, Ballon Blanc, the white ball in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. As well as Black and Blue in Montreal as well.
Is one of the big ones, yeah. So that's been going from since 1995. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are the Black and Blue Festival. Now, these are essentially raves that can go on for at least a day. Honestly, I mean, maybe it's because I'm not partaking in the aforementioned condiments. But I don't think I'd have the energy. You could get a solid hour of dancing out of me, and maybe that's about it. But that might be why I'm not a circuit gay.
I mean, if you pumped yourself with the same volume of uppers that circuit gays are known for consuming, I'm pretty sure you could dance for 36 hours straight.
Yeah, anyone can be a certain. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's so.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Exactly. Absolutely. Unless prescribed by a doctor. All right. So yeah, the reason why it became a story is there is a new club in London in the UK trying to essentially, their remit is like, look, we have XYZ and bars already in existence, and they are doing a pretty good job of serving your mainstream what's the word I'm looking for, gays. Actually, my sister called me a dinkwad yesterday. Well, she called me and Jake a dinkwad, which is double income with double income, no kids, and a dog.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's an acronym. And it's those. It's double income gays, couples, usually quite affluent. Gay men are usually overrepresented in quite well-paid positions. Usually we did a whole episode a while ago about what are very gay positions, what are occupations that are disproportionately held by gay men, is perhaps a better way of saying it. But so this nightclub has essentially said, look, you already have places. We're going to make a venue for the folks who don't feel comfortable in those places. That's their raison d'etre. That's their purpose in life. So they have an event coming up. It's the Adonis Pride event in July. Mm-hmm. It actually just happened. And they issued a notice to all of the ticket holders, saying that they've got a new policy to create a safe clubbing experience for everyone, and making sure that they're fully committed to ensuring that marginalized groups feel comfortable at the club. There is no space for arrogance or privilege, and essentially there is there was a no circuit gay rule, and it caused quite a lot of backlash from folks who might be identified as circuit gays.
Quite reasonably, yes.
Yeah, they issued a statement on their Instagram, and I'll read some of it here. To those who feel the need to make a fuss about potentially being denied entry to a party, so enraged that you call for boycotts, demand apologies, threaten violence, verbally abuse us, send hateful messages, urge venues and associates stop working with us, we suggest you seriously reflect on your overwhelming sense of entitlement. Might just be the reason we don't want you on our dance floor. Have you considered that your attitude and how you move in and use a space may cause other queer people to feel uncomfortable in your presence? Or how your dominance over queer space could, in fact, be the issue here? Your outrage reeks of male privilege. This isn't only a circuit gay problem. It's more widespread than that. Toxic masculinity has no place in queer culture. Their implementing a door policy hasn't been an easy decision, and they acknowledge that we may not get it right in every instance, but we are committed to making these changes. Now, the issue here is, we talked about what is a circuit
gay. There's a dozen issues.
There's dozens of issues.
Well, but first of all, let's talk about the fact that the club is called Adonis.
I know.
And it has a no circuit gay policy.
The irony is not lost on me.
I've looked up some of the social media. All the posters for this event have Circuit Club, Circuit Gaze on their posters as well. They're using No Body Hair Muscled Oily Boys as their